You're going to do a little business to start?
Yes.
Please be at it.
Meeting of Deschutes County Commissioners and City of Logan City Council. So this will be the opening of our work session of the County Commissioners. So we do have two items that are going to be kind of off the agenda, other items that just followed us here today. We're not having another meeting for another week and a half now, so we just wanted to get some of these items out of the way. A memorandum of understanding for a crisis response pool. So Eric, can you explain a little bit?
Yes, thank you. I'm Eric Kropp, Deputy County Administrator. This is a memorandum of understanding with our bargaining group, AFSCME, that provides an on-call pool for our MCAT team. MCAT is Mobile Crisis Assessment Team. It's out of our Health Services Department, and MCAT members are therapists that are on-call that go out to crisis situations when people in the community have a mental health or a mental crisis. They're also often called by law enforcement to help de-escalate situations so that rather than using force, the hope is that our behavioral therapists can work with these people to de-escalate the situation. The members of our MCAT are psychologists and behavioral health specialists. They kind of work on a firefighter schedule where they'll be on call and for a 24-hour period. Oftentimes during that 24-hour period, they might be working 12, 14, 18 hours, and then they're off for a couple of days. It's a small team of four people, and it's a real challenge to have somebody on call and working 24 hours a day. When there's vacancies, it creates a real challenge for that team because they can't cover the shifts. What this agreement does is it allows us to tap into our pool of other therapists in the department to help cover shifts. And our therapists are non-exempt, our therapists are exempt employees, meaning we can't pay them and don't pay them overtime. So if we use a therapist from another program area for this type of work, we can't pay them overtime, and it's not really fair to the employee to demand that they work. And so this agreement provides a stipend for them when they cover shifts. And it's, again, it's only for when we're low and have vacancies on this small team. So it's a coverage issue for a very important service that we provide throughout the community.
So we talked about it a little bit.
And I'm sorry, I'll pass around the agreement just in case you want to look at it. Our commissioners have a copy.
So if I may, so it wouldn't apply to someone who's maybe on halftime. They wouldn't be able to get
no.
the pool?
Okay. No, I believe that's to be full-time to be eligible to be part of the pool.
Okay, it does when regular full-time crisis staff are unavailable.
And also we wouldn't allow the person to work to get the stipend when they're working their normal shift as in their regular position. Now, if they got supervisory approval, they could take time management leave and then work a shift. But we don't want somebody being paid twice.
So I couldn't work my daily shift of seeing clients and then take a shift in that evening and then work
You could.
I could,
yeah.
If I have supervisor approval.
Right.
Okay. I don't know that it states that I need to be a full-time employee. I think it talks about the process. Regular full-time crisis staff will provide coverage, but in the qualifications, maybe it doesn't matter because it would fall under supervisor approval. But I wonder if that then, for benefits, if that would pose an issue.
This is pretty infrequent, so it's unlikely to change their FTE to a significant extent. I mean,
okay.
If we do have somebody who is 70% FTE or 0.7, FTE and then they end up working 0.8 for a long period of time, we will go back to the department and say you need to get approval from the Board of Commissioners to add that fraction of the FTE and increase their benefit amount because it wouldn't be fair to the employee otherwise.
Okay.
But I don't think that this poses that situation.
So the last sentence in the agreement basically says you can't modify or amend this except if all three parties who are signatories at the bottom agree. Well, what happens if the county wants to change and the union doesn't? Or we want to just say, we like this, but we don't need to use it anymore?
This is the use of the on-call pool is at the department's discretion. So if the department doesn't want to use it anymore, it's the authority is fully within the department not to, to use this.
Okay.
If the department wanted to change the agreement and there was a disagreement and they sat down with, asked me to negotiate the agreement, it is a mandatory subject of bargaining. And ultimately, if there was disagreement, then the department can, with the board's approval, change the agreement, and then AFSCME's remedy would be to strike if they disagreed with it. I don't think we'd ever get to that point, but that's the path.
So this is kind of a permanent agreement under the current contract. If the contract expires, then this would be to fold it in, or?
Yeah, this is kind of an ongoing memorandum of understanding. It's just like a collective bargaining agreement, but it runs separately from the collective bargaining agreement.
Would it expire with the current?
No, it would continue on. And in fact, there's another agreement with, for the MCAT team that talks about the whole scheduling of the regular staff that has been ongoing. And then about a year ago, at the request of the department, we sat down with AFSCME, negotiated changes to that agreement, which then came to the board for approval.
And if it doesn't flow very well, the department can just not use it. They
Correct.
Don't need to take it off the books.
Correct. And also with the whole MCAT team, there's a provision in the whole agreement saying that if the department chooses not to, the department can, or the county can dissolve the MCAT agreement, the base agreement, with a 30-day notice to the employees.
I think this is a great solution to an immediate problem. So I think hopefully it's motivation enough to make sure our team has first right of taking some of these shifts on to provide that service.
So I'll move approval of document 2015-455, an agreement on a memorandum of understanding about MCAT.
If I could just add that request that it be county administrator's, authorized county administrator signature.
That too.
Thank you.
That's been seconded.
Yep.
Any other discussion? Commissioner Unger?
Yes.
Commissioner Bean?
Yes.
And chair votes yes.
Great.
Thank you.
So pardon us, we have one more item here. So a letter of support for small community air service development program, Redmond Airport. Do you have some backup?
Yeah, so the Redmond Airport has used this program twice. Once when Delta Airlines wanted to start service, and the other was when American wanted to start service to Los Angeles. What this program does, it's like $500,000 grant from the federal government that is used to support or supplement the start of air service. Now when Delta came in and started service to Salt Lake City, I don't think any of their money was used. We turned it all back to the federal government. But it's a program the federal government has to help start up a service and prove it out.
Very good.
So it's a letter of support, not asking for matching funds?
Correct. We're supporting the city's request.
Okay.
Did they have a new service they're trying to add?
To Phoenix.
With who?
Who's the service to Phoenix with?
I don't know that they specified the airline. It's just
whoever they can get.
Oh.
Very good. So there is the document number, but it's a letter of support.
Do I move approval? I apparently hogged all the motions this morning, so.
I'll move approval of the letter of support for the Redmond Airport.
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? Commissioner Unger?
Yes.
Commissioner Bain?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes also. Thank you. So thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. That was a safe special basis that followed us here today.
All right. Thank you very much. And on behalf of the city, we are thrilled to have the BOCC here with us today and joining us. And it's an honor and a privilege to have you here. So thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for inviting
us. Yeah.
And
if we have work in the city where we work at, we never get invited. So thank you for inviting us.
We accept. But I will, for the record, for the city, I'd like to note that Councilor Kathy Agin has had to leave. However, the council still has a quorum in place. And maybe we could go around the room. And
introduction?
Sure.
You're first, Stu.
Me first.
You first.
Stu Martinez, Lapine City Council.
Tony DeBone, Deschutes County Commissioner.
Greg Jones, LaPine City Councilor.
Tammy Bainey, Deschutes Commissioner.
Tom Anderson, County Administrator.
Alan Unger, County Commissioner.
Karen Ward, Councilor, LaPine.
Eric Kropp, Deputy County Administrator.
Rick Allen, City Manager.
Corey Misley, Assistant City Manager.
Ken Mullenix, I'm the Mayor, and we'll start over here, please.
Oh, Kathy DeBone. Citizen.
Janet Burton, the Area Economic Development Manager with EDCO.
Peter Russell, Deschutes County Transportation Planner.
Nick Leemack, Deschutes County Community Development Director.
Douglas Ward, Planning Commission and Public Works Committee.
Tim Fleming, Public Works.
Toria Fleming, Planning Commission.
Brad Baird, Anderson Perry and Associates, helping the city with infrastructure.
Brandon Nail, Anderson Perry and Associates.
Susan Ross, County Property Facilities Director.
Steve Ranky, Deschutes County 911 Director.
Well, and with that comment of a 911 director, we're going to move right to item number three, I think, 911 briefing.
Welcome to the hot seat.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Appreciate the opportunity to be here. We've embarked on a pretty ambitious project that actually started about 3 or 4 years ago when the local public safety officials realized that our radio system is reaching end of life. Any of you who have Windows 95? Right? Nobody has Windows 95 anymore, so because of the same issue. Companies terminate their service support, and the same thing is true of the county's radio system. So the Sheriff's Office has maintained for many years a radio system multi-site that has served not only the Sheriff's Office deputies, but road departments, public works, City of Bend Police, and some other users. And as of July 1st, by Board of County Commissioner action, the Sheriff's Office transferred the ownership and responsibility of that system to the district, to the 911 district. The City of Redmond's Council did the same thing with their one-site radio system earlier in June. So as of July 1st, we're the proud owner of two law enforcement radio systems. We are taking responsibility for those because our intent is to merge them into one more efficient system in the short term. But in the long term, because both of these systems are end of life, like Windows XP, I guess, is the next to go out the door with Microsoft, they're end of life, so folks were realizing we have to plan for how we're going to replace this multi-million dollar system when it does reach its end of life. So toward that end, the group about 2 years ago started to meet and formed a consortium to hire a company known as Sparling Engineering from the Puget Sound area to do a study to say, what should we do? What should this new radio system look like to help them scope it, to help them plan it, and cost it? And that study was completed and distributed last August. And at that time, Sparling Engineering said, based on the parameters that you've talked about here, which is essentially to build and construct your own system, it's about $13 million for the infrastructure. In other words, all the radio sites, the microwave dishes, the new radios to replace the existing trunked radio systems, and the controllers, all the radio equipment in the county. Big number. And so I was hired September, so a month, like a week later after that report came out.
Surprise!
Yeah, but of course during the process of being hired, I was, okay, I know what I'm stepping into. And in the previous 911 centers that I've led in Washington State, both of those centers, we were responsible for a radio system. So it is a natural fit for a 911 center to own and operate radio systems because we're essentially the authority for managing a community-wide system. Because what we do, we cover the whole community. So when I arrived, I started talking with a colleague of mine who I've worked with in the past, as well as our staff, and said, well, that's a pretty big number. What can we do to maybe make that better? And so through some more meetings with our stakeholders and concurrently with a strategic planning process that went through late last year, we said, you know, the state radio project 3 or 4 years ago, OWIN as it was known when it first started, was pretty much a disaster. And the state got branded with, this isn't a very good idea, it's not working out. Recognizing that the state still needed to do a radio system statewide for the state police and for the Department of Transportation, they said, let's reorganize it, redo it, and do a better job, and hand it to the State Department of Transportation and say, you manage this project and make it happen. Here's the funding you need to make it work. You have a good overall plan for that system, so put it in place. Well, that's it. Now that it's about 3 years later, the state radio project is about 75-80% complete. In the valley and other areas of the state, it's very well developed. But the key to the state system and any radio system is not
an individual radio. It is a system where all the radio sites can communicate with the dispatch centers so that we can broadcast off of all those sites and talk to the responders in the field. So by if we build our own radio system, independent of anybody else, about $13 million. If we partner with the state, who's doing the same thing in our area, it cuts the cost about in half, and we're hoping to do even better than that. So what we embarked on was a process to hire another consultant that has worked with the state of Oregon in the past and is currently working with them in the Salem area, as well as another statewide radio project in Utah, and a colleague of mine that I've worked with for 20 years that I have confidence in. And we said, Joe Blashkin, Edcom Engineering, is the right company to help lead us now toward that partnership approach, as opposed to we got to do it on our own. Because when you think about it, the state has radios in the same places we have radios. So say on top of Wampus Butte, there's a microwave dish looking at another microwave dish maybe 30 miles away that all is part of the system. And we would be constructing the same thing right below or above those two microwave dishes. And those are about $15,000 to $20,000 on each end, all the equipment to make those microwave links work. Well, that's pretty hard to explain to the public why we couldn't work together to share that system and share that bandwidth. So the state's system has enough bandwidth to be able to support the entire county's infrastructure point to point, with the addition of a couple of things that we bring. We have a site on Aubrey Butte they very much want to be in, and we have a site at the 911 center they also want to be in, because it'll give them better coverage for their customers, which is the state police and DOT. So that partnership, we're having meetings over the next 2 months to start to formulate what the specific radio infrastructure will look like, where we'll partner, and start to formulate the agreements on how we're going to exchange services, because we have services they want, they have services we want. So kind of tying this back in, we will become part of the state radio system by bolting on the added infrastructure we need to support our users in our county. Because the state's already putting trunked radio in this area for their folks. So all it takes is 10 or 15 more channels in each of the sites at a cost of maybe $150,000 to $250,000 each instead of $2 or $3 million each. Boy, does that ever make sense. So we're really enthusiastic about where we're going with this. And so as we have begun to develop this, we the 911 district, with the approval of the board through the budget process, have said we're going to commit a couple $100,000 toward that partnership and developing those costs, so we know exactly what the radio system will cost and what our long-term operation and maintenance costs will also be, because that's a big factor in a radio system. You buy all the equipment and then you got to maintain it. So why I'm here today is to say, yeah, let's get back to the ask. Is that we are at our plan right now is to fully refine the cost of the system by the end of probably the end of September, and we think that number is going to be around $6 million or less. And we have enough money in the reserves from the 911 district to be able to pay for that capital cost. Now that's a real fortunate position to be in, through frugal use of money, through keeping carryover. We have carryover, let's spend it. We banked that money knowing that we had a lot of equipment to replace down the road. So what we do need help with, or will need help with, is long term, is the maintenance and operation of the system. And that will probably run $1 million to $1.5 million a year. Wow, that's like a sixth of the cost of the system. Yeah, they are pretty expensive. Now that's worst case. We're hoping, again, through partnerships and sharing of services and site licenses and leases, we're hoping to do better than that. But that's kind of where we are. So that $200,000 that has everyone seen the letter on council? Did they get a chance to look at the letter that we're talking about?
We have it in our pack.
Okay, great. That's what I was hoping that you had a chance to see it, because I kind of wanted to brief you on all this, and if you weren't comfortable with taking action today, I'd just come back for a future meeting and we could talk further. But the letter of support that we're asking you to authorize the mayor to sign is to say, wow, we think what you're doing with the radio system and your approach to it makes a lot of sense, and as elected officials, we're willing to help with the support of that as a council. That's what we're asking for. And so what I'm here to do, what I'm here today to do is to persuade you that we're on the right path, we're doing the right thing, we're spending district money up front to make sure that this is going down the right path and as frugal and as effective and efficient as we could possibly make it. So your support toward that end is what we're looking for. And please, Tom.
Just add to that a little bit that Steve didn't mention, and we can have him talk about that if you'd like, but the other side of what Steve was asked to do when he came in, and we're, by the way, very fortunate to have Steve as our new 911 director. He's got incredible experience in the field, and the agency needed it. We've had a lot of 911 directors over the years, as you all know, and we think Steve is the answer to what we've been looking for. But Steve talked very eloquently about the capital needs with the radio system, but the other side was the, really the operational issues that we've been having with 911 and turnover of dispatchers, a lot of overtime and so forth. And Steve, through a strategic plan that also has gone through and been blessed by the commissioners, come up with a long-term plan for where we need to be operationally to ensure that when someone calls, the phone's going to get answered, both the public and law enforcement and fire agencies. So there's a little bit of a cost to get where we need to be staffing-wise, also long-term. So what all that means, that combined with the capital needs, is a levy ask of the public. And we're shooting for next May, May of 16, for that, where we would ask the public to convert the temporary levy, 20-cent temporary levy, to permanent with an increment on top of that to pay for both the maintenance of the radio system that Steve mentioned as well as the operational needs of 911 long term. And we realize that that's not an easy ask, and we believe, even though about 4 years ago we tried the same thing in converting the temporary to permanent, we barely lost. We had 48% approval in the depths of the recession. 2 years ago we renewed the temporary levy with over 75% approval. So I think people generally recognize the value and the need for 911 from a public safety standpoint, but we don't want to take anything for granted. And we believe that, again, the only way that we can truly convince the public is to have the credibility of all of the cities and the fire districts with us in letting the citizens know that we believe that this is critically important for the entire community. So almost all of the other cities and districts have already signed the letter. They recognize, they have seats at the table at the 911 user board. Lapine is represented through the fire district at that on the user board with Chief Supkus. The sheriff's office is the law enforcement agency for the city. Obviously, is finely tuned into what we're doing. But you know, again, that's why the letter of support, both now and then next year, once we know precisely what the numbers are. When we're talking to the public, that we can hopefully count on the city's support to help us tell that story to the public.
Okay. We would add that to our agenda tonight for the letter of, if you wanted to approve it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd like, you know, to add a couple things. You know, as a Tom, thanks. He really fleshed out the rest of the story on that, and the. We actually hope to have the figures of what the cost will be long-term for 911 for the radio system, for maintenance and operation, as well as for our long-term sustainability for operations by the end of September. And what that means is, once we have that number, then we'll be able to forecast an ask for the levy rate, and we will also be coming back to each board and council for a resolution supporting us putting that measure on the ballot for May of 2016. We have to accomplish that no later than November 1st. So you're likely to see us again in 2 or 3 months. And we'll have much more information and have refined costs for you.
If you remember when we tried to convert it to permanent 4 years ago, because of the quirks in state law, we literally have to abolish the existing district and create a brand new district with a permanent rate.
Yeah.
The mechanics are ugly, but it's hard to convince the public what has to happen there, but that's unfortunately what we're faced with. So in order to do that, under state law, again, it requires the approval of each taxing entity in the county, which includes the city of La Pine. So that's
what's your rate per thousand?
Currently it's 16 cents for the permanent rate, at 16.18 to be specific, and 20 cents for the temporary. So we're at 36.18.
Are you going to be tri-county at some point?
You know, I'm an advocate of consolidation or regionalization because it's a benefit to the public and to the responders, because we have more depth when we have a larger center. And what I foresee is that as there's some interest by the legislature in persuading smaller counties to join with larger counties for efficiency. The challenge we have is right now under state law, each county gets 1% of the 911 tax fund, which is about $250,000 minimum based on population. So it helps the little counties. Well, great, I can pay for my records custodian and my jail person, because a person in a small county wears all those hats in 911. So kind of to get back to your question, would I like to see a multi-regional approach? Sure, as time moves forward. And the way we would likely accomplish that would be to look at what the rate per call is and then do it on a contract basis with other agencies rather than try to incorporate.
Then they still get their 250.
I'm sorry?
Do they still get their 250?
No, we would get that. So in areas where there have been consolidations, the 911 authority, the money flows to that agency.
Is it correct that we had worked with both Crook and Jefferson in the past to see if there was something that we could bring about? Jefferson, in particular, is new to an Eastern Oregon group.
Yeah, they put theirs in a regional center, correct, north.
Yeah, they went up to with what's known as Frontier. They were called Tricom, and then they realized that doesn't work for four counties. So they renamed themselves as Frontier. And they're based in
Condon,
right.
Yes.
And boy, imagine trying to get staff. You know, I just can't imagine the challenges they face. But that's Sherman, Wasco,
Gillum,
and Jefferson, right. So we'd love to have talks with them about that, but I see that as a couple years down the road. Yeah, yeah. And the upside is with the state radio project, we'll have connectivity to those various areas. So we could provide service, really, at some point for Eastern Oregon. Now that's the big picture dream in 10, 15 years.
Well, the council, you guys will take that up tonight.
Right. We will add it to the agenda this evening and
I think you need to get that done.
Move forward.
Yeah, that would be great. And then I have one other thing for the council's consideration, and that is our operating agreement that we have with each of our the agencies that we serve. It's a very straightforward agreement. I'm assuming it's also in your packages. And what it does is essentially define the role of the county commissioners as our governing board, the role of the county administrator, the role of the 911 director, and the role of the user board, and just outlines how we're going to do business. It's really a set of bylaws more than anything else. And so we're asking each of our partner agencies in the county to consider authorizing that signature as well.
Okay.
So a little bit of clarity, the 911 district is a separate special district. Just like sewer and water used to be a special district. It's a countywide district. It provides dispatch and support for all the fire and police in the county. So it's Bend and Redmond Police, Black Butte Ranch, Sun River, the Sheriff's Department itself, La Pine Fire, Sisters, Bend, Redmond Fire District. So all the districts utilize it because it is that common blanket for when you pick up 911, they know who to dispatch, how to manage an incident, how to keep the police going from one event to another throughout the night or the day. So it is kind of historically, it's our wonderful overlay of the countywide service.
Steve, are you a county employee?
I am a district employee, but we work through the county for our finance services, HR, legal, administration, and all those things.
And are you staying longer than the average?
Yes.
Straight shooting there.
Just wanted to make sure. I'd like to make sure we have less directors than years it's been in existence.
Yeah, my goal is to be the most tenured director when I leave here, and that won't take too much.
He's almost there.
Half of them be, but a lot of them were interims.
Yeah, that's a tough job. Yeah.
No, the passion. You got to work in an area where you have passion. And I think, the value of what 911 does is being that bridge between the citizens and public safety. And part of that team is very gratifying.
You got a lot of fire chiefs to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. And but it's it's all about the communication, and that's why the strategic planning, if I can, couple more minutes, the strategic planning process that we went through last fall was so helpful, because all our stakeholders were at the table helping guide the agency, because I said, what do you want from your 911 center? And here are the industry standards, here are the best practices, we can meet those, how do you want to do business? And that's, that process helped us evolve to where we are today with this good, with this proposal. So good, we're all on the same page. Okay. Great. All right, thanks again for your time.
Thanks.
We can go to Ed Coe and Janet Burton, our LED manager.
Thank you. I guess I'll take the hot seat now. Great. Well, my name is Janet Burton, and I'm the area economic development manager. And about 90 days ago, I sat in this room with my interview. And, you know, talking about working in a field that you have a passion for, I'm more excited than I was when I interviewed the position. So I wanted to give you really a brief update. One of our advisory board members had mentioned that nobody really outside of our advisory board knows what our economic development advisory board does, so I thought it would be good to be able to share with you. You know, my initial 90 days has really kind of been fact-finding, I would say going to school, understanding the enterprise zone and industrial land, had the opportunity to meet with James Lewis and understand the intergovernmental agreement, and all of reading the historical documents on the area, because that to me was very important coming in, is to kind of understand the history of the area, understand what had been done, not duplicate efforts, and get a real sense of the community and who was working on what and where I could be most effective. In the last month, I've been pretty excited because we've been able to assist two startup food industry. Our food product businesses actually met with one this afternoon and linked them in with the community kitchen, where they can rent space from the community kitchen in their startup phase. So it actually will help out the community kitchen because they'll get paid for renting the space, which they haven't done prior to this. And it also helps the startup company while they kind of get going and develop their product. I've been able to work with a medical device technology company who's going into beta testing from Sun River. They're targeting the equine market, and actually in the last couple of weeks have made some really great connections for their product. Also had a call from somebody over in the valley who is potentially interested in relocating a manufacturing business here in Lapine, and we've sent them out a proposal and following up with them. So it's been really exciting over the last couple of weeks to start to see, you know, new businesses wanting to start up, wanting to live here, choosing Lapine and then deciding I want to do, you know, the business, or that this is the area that they want to do their business in. You know, over the next couple of months, yesterday we had a four-hour strategic planning meeting for our economic development advisory board, which I thought was really, really helpful. We did a SWOT analysis, and actually I thought it was really exciting, because when you look at a SWOT analysis, look at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and usually one side or the other is like really imbalanced. But it really was a very balanced SWOT analysis. There was the recognition that we have challenges in the area, that we were further behind some of the other communities, but you acknowledge that and you look to learn from the other communities and where they have grown. We don't want to be a Sisters, we don't want to be a Prineville, but you can certainly learn from understanding what other communities have done and maybe avoid some of the pitfalls that they have encountered. So I think coming out of our strategic planning meeting yesterday, we've come up with two or three goals for the next 2 to 3 years that have metrics. I don't have them all written down because we only finished up last night, but basically helping to focus on industries like our wood products, because that's kind of natural for this area in many ways, alternative energy, outdoor apparel and equipment. And we put in brewing in there. We have Sun River Brewing Company. There's also a new brew pub that's just coming to Sun River, Rattle Brewing as well. We also have some interest in having a brew pub or something similar in the Pine area here. So rather than try and go out and focus on 10 or 15 different industries, we basically tried to narrow it down and then put metrics on that as to what we were going to achieve and then the how of how we were going to achieve it. So I will leave it at that. I've given you kind of more detail there, but just to open it up for any questions that you might have.
I would just want to start off by, you had mentioned that you're further behind than some of the other cities, but I see miles ahead. This community, you're the youngest city in the state of Oregon, and to see this level of dedication and commitment to enhancing the vitality of your community, I just think it's kind of makes the hairs on my arm stand up a little bit. It's very, very exciting. So do you feel that you have the support from the county that you need, and are you feeling the support that in order to move forward?
Absolutely. I mean, I think both city and county, and you know, it's been great. There's a huge, to me, there's kind of like a tsunami, you know. There's a real swell in the community, I think, with, you know, efforts that Kathy is doing as well with RDI and many of the other rest of the community. But it seems like the pieces are starting to kind of fall together, and it's focusing on that momentum and making sure it continues to go forward. And obviously, we'll have setbacks along the way, but you readjust and then figure out a different way of going at it. I'm a pretty persistent person. I've been called the sweetest pit bull that somebody's ever met. You know, and I'm very kind of focused, and I'm really, really excited about the things that are going on in the community and the support. I mean, I feel, you know, a huge amount of support locally, and kind of my dedication or wanting to be part of the process. Currently I live in Bend, but in 2 weeks I'm moving to South County, and that's a really big thing for me. You know, it was just like, I want to be here, I want to be part of this growth, and there's just so many kind of talented people and excited people in the community. I've never come across a community anywhere that has as much passion, and people just give so much in this community of their time, of their efforts, of their money. It really is inspiring. You can't not be inspired.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, and like you said, you know, this community maybe is the youngest, but really in ways it's one of the more mature, because the county has been supporting the community with the industrial park that serves and a lot of other things that we've done here, the light in town. And I think I'm just tickled pink that you're here doing this kind of work. It's like fishing, you know, you have to be ready, and you have to be ready to set the hook when it comes. And in some ways, you just set the table and then you wait. But I don't hear you waiting. I hear you developing a lot of things that need to be happening. And I applaud you for coming and living in the community. I think that's a big deal.
I would follow the commissioner's comments about great partnerships that got us to where we are now. We go back and look at where the industrial park and business park came from, and that legacy of moving forward, being a new city. You're right, I really believe that we are a very fast, forward-moving city. I think it's a new era of, you know, electronics, of doing business, of bringing something into a community and not having the kinds of old infrastructure that usually comes with business. We've really got a new opportunity here to bring all of this latest technology type business to town to build from the ground up. So it is, it's a plum ready to pick. And I'm proud of where the LED group has come with the support of the county and the city, working as the best partners you could ever want to have in place to put the LED group and together and get it going and then having this, our new director, and just where we've come from to in the last few days with the strategic planning and the, some of the comments you've made, it's exciting. It is. So thank the county for the help in all they're doing, and don't quit on us now.
And I need to echo that, because when the city incorporated, our first city council meeting was held over in the old library, and then the county rented this space over here at the South County building, and Commissioner Daley brought down a check and presented it to the first city council to help get us started. And the county has been the backbone of our the support for us, along with a couple gentlemen from the state. And another big supporter was Ben Wessler. You know, he was a tremendous amount of support for this city. But so many people took for granted in this community what the county did before the city was incorporated. And some of those folks are beginning to realize how much the county did do for this community, because those services have been taken over by the city, and we're such a new city, we can't provide everything that you folks did. We're working on it, and we're doing the best we can, and we're doing great at it, by the way. But it's also because of the support you folks give us. So I think the partnership that the county and the city has, along with our state folks, it is exciting times. I mean, the meeting we were at, like, you know, Commissioner DeBono was there, the meeting for lead yesterday, not only was there electricity in the air, but it was in that room. You know, you could feel it. Everybody was so excited to get moving forward. And I think that's what you're going to see this city doing, with your support.
Thank you very much.
Well done. Any other council comments? Commissioner? Anything?
No comments.
Affordable housing?
I think, I don't know if Tom, we were going to put that, Susan, and we had Susan, and her took a little break in there. We didn't go in just to say hi to each other. We actually had a blueprint of a piece of property, and could we partition it in the industrial park, and that's what we were talking about.
Great.
So we did a side work for 2 minutes, and so, you know, it wasn't because we didn't want to listen to you. We're trying to sell some land, and while I got Susan here, I figured we better catch her.
Did you like her answer?
Yes. Oh. I always like Susan's answers, and if not, we
I'm
just...
I'm nice to some people.
We just... we work them around. We get there.
I love it. So, what's to say?
Just affordable housing, but it's, you know, obviously it's a hot topic in the region right now, and Lapine is an area that has not had affordable housing projects because it's unincorporated, really. You know, the Housing Works type programs are inside the cities, you know, and so we're actually the only jurisdiction that the Housing Works does not have a project of any kind. They don't have a unit of housing to speak of. There's a voucher program with a few vouchers that are with private owners. And of course, the senior project that's with Little Deschutes Lodge has been very successful for seniors, and they've built two phases. But one of the big needs is families. You have a lower income community in South County, and you have, obviously, there's folks with some kids. We don't have a lot of apartments, and what we have is a lot of single wide trailer houses that are substandard. We're not talking 1985 single wides. We have a lot of 1965 or camp trailers, and you go by these camp trailers and you see the bicycles, and you know that you've all been in one, and that means the dining room table is the bed. You know how that all works. And there's way too many of them. Tom Kemper and I toured around a couple years ago and looked at some properties, and you know, it wasn't quite the topic as much then, but you know, as it's escalated. And so Tom called me about 3 weeks ago or so and said, hey, I want to get with you, and we really have to do something in Lapine. And so when I then called Tom or emailed you about maybe some potential and where the county could participate in something, and I went and talked to Tom, and we met for an hour, and then Tom was going to talk to Tom a little, and then Susan brought it up. And so I don't know where all that'll go, but there's definitely a need here for affordable housing for families. And so that's my...
We had a conversation in the past, and you were talking the need for a workforce and workforce housing. Are they the same?
Yeah, I mean, this would be, I mean, we're not talking, yeah, I would think so. We were not talking about, when you say workforce, other, I mean, affordable housing is, I'm going to get confused on the term. Workforce housing sounds like migrant housing, if I mean, or something that's, we don't have the kind of businesses here that are...
I don't see it as migrant housing. I see it more as housing to allow for people to live here and work here.
Well, that's what apartments, that's...
Well, one of the needs is Sun River, Mount Bachelor, seasonal. You know, they're kind of offset each other. So we do have people that are looking for housing that are coming here 6 months at a time with decent jobs. So, I mean, that is something that can be served in the city of Lapine. They're not too far away.
And I believe, if I may, that they are looking to address something collectively together in the Sun River area. And I think that there is definitely an opportunity in front of the city of Lapine to be able to secure some housing, because it you've grown. I think you know more now of what you need. It was very difficult for Pacific Crest to get the numbers to be able to support the need for the senior housing in the past. Oregon housing also has changed, and so I think there are a lot of dynamics that we battled in the past that might be a little easier today. So
Well, when Rick called, he had a very specific patch of dirt in mind.
Ours.
That happens to be owned by the county, and so I...
He didn't call you just to ask you to lunch.
But, and I talked to Susan, and maybe it's because she likes Rick as opposed to others. She was actually, I thought it was a great idea, and I talked to each of our commissioners who are supportive of at least moving the conversation forward. So I guess with that, I'll ask Susan to give maybe a little bit more background on the specific parcel that we're talking about and how this might play out working forward.
So when the new neighborhood was created, the county set aside a 12-acre portion of, at the very southern end of that, specifically dedicated to, you know, social services, the kind of items that we saw in there were going to be low-income housing, senior-assisted housing, possibly parks, medical facilities, a nonprofit daycare, all of those social types. So we did donate about 2 acres to the Lapine Senior Center, so that is a portion of where that property is located. We donated 4.5 acres to
Pacific Crest.
What is it called?
Little Deschutes Lodges.
Lodge.
Yeah.
Did you guys get that land, Susan?
We did donate that land, so we didn't sell it. So that was given as part of that project.
It has reversionary.
Yes, we put reversionaries on all of our properties. So we dedicated 4.5 acres there. So the other side, if you look right across the street from where that housing developed, the senior housing is,
the
there's about a 7-acre parcel remaining there. We're not saying that, you know, the whole 7 acres is available, but that would be the property the county has available. And like I said, it was, you know, dedicated specifically for these types of projects. So it would be up to...
And Susan, this is the area on the east side of the senior center, Little Deschutes?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, so Tom, when I was hunting that down, actually I came across it hunting for the St. Charles. And so I had that back here, and so when Kemper called, I thought, So he said that the difference, a little bit like Little Deschutes Lodge, the difference that makes of having land that you don't have to spend a bunch of money on, that can make it work, you know. And the other thing is the roads are going down to it, and water, there's a fire hydrant back there, so you know you've got 8-inch of some 8-inch water mains. I don't know what size, but they're all of them are big. And so the services are pretty close there, and it's also at the senior center. You know, schools are a couple blocks away, so right. They can walk. You can shop at Bi-Mart next door, so you really, your doctor, medical clinics are right next to that, so you could be without a car. You could get a job, you can go to school, you can see your doctor, and you can shop. You don't need transportation, taxis, or anything.
And you can go play bingo.
You can play bingo at the senior center. You could volunteer at the senior center. But anyway, if that could work out, so have you gotten back to Tom at all, or have you guys talked to Tom?
Yeah, I talked to Tom, just exchanged emails, okay. And just to let him know that we were going to discuss it with the board, and just to make sure he was still interested, and he said, very, with an exclamation point.
So, okay.
Yeah. So we did discuss it with the board. Commissioner Bainey wasn't at that meeting, so...
She was briefed otherwise.
Okay. Great. Well, it's a priority for us to get something like that. And those are, and I told the county, those projects, Alan, you know, these are a lot of years in the making. They take for a long time. You know, identifying the land, but then they got to get
a grant,
the grants, the funder, the people that will build it, because they tend to be built by private. They are, they're not always owned by the housing works. It depends. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios of how these are funded with tax credits, and housing works may operate it, and you know. So it was a lot of time down the road. But he told me that Tom said 24 to 50 units type project. He said they don't like to build 24s because it's management costs. Mm-hmm. It costs the same to run one if it's 48 units and 24. But it could be a phased in where you build a first phase and then you come back and build a second phase.
Well, and that might be a good way to move this forward. If we had an idea from Tom and Housing Works on, you know, kind of a footprint, what works, maybe phase one, then that would help us narrow down the amount of land that might be necessary.
Correct.
For something like that.
So we'll just keep working with him and to flush out that idea and keep everyone up.
Yeah, I'll talk to him some more, and maybe we'll get together sometime. You know, let, now I don't know what he does, but.
And we didn't, just so you know, we didn't donate the entire parcel, both phases.
Sure.
We did it one at a time. We wanted to show that the first phase was completed, and then, you know, it triggered. Once that was done, then it triggered the second donation.
And right now, we do not have a park SDC in place, although they would like one, and there's no transportation SDC. So the big battle in Bend over park SDCs, and it doesn't even exist here. So if you get a good, you get some donated land plus no transportation SDC, and that could really make this work out.
Pencil
out for something.
Yeah.
So if I may, just from a, so he'll need to go to Oregon Housing to secure funding, the same hoops that we went through with Pacific Crest. Typically, developments do not get funded their first go-around, so you're looking at a little bit of a timeline lag. Depending on what the demographics show in terms of need, I would almost go big versus phasing two projects. I think your timeline will not, the ability to build as aggressively as Pacific Crest was allowed, I don't know that you'll meet that same
sure.
criteria now because you've been able to address some of the need. Just knowing how we were able to get those developments forward. The second one, I just think you'll struggle. The timeline will be lengthy and lengthier than it was in the past.
Now the state just is giving $40 million more through the legislature for low-income housing.
Yes, and some of that is identified for, they actually have another, I believe, $22 million that's been set aside for mental health housing, so those suffering with...
Off that 40?
No. So in addition. But the difficulty when you look at the needs across the state of Oregon, you may have less than 1% of rental vacancy, and the needs in terms of the housing stock that you have is not housing stock that's meeting the needs of your constituents. That's happening all across the state. So $40 million is...
A drop.
Is a drop. Not to sound like $40 million isn't important, but $40 million spread over the state of Oregon, we're going to have to really have a sharp pencil in terms of telling the story and the need for why low-income family housing here is needed. So my only counsel would be that we don't try to phase, if we can, only because the timeline, the need is today,
right.
And that timeline could be stretched out an extra 3 to 5 years, which is fine. I mean, it's better to have that than nothing. But if we can make the need, make the case for the need for a larger development out of the gate, I would push that.
I think that tying this to economic development as it would normally be in my, you know, discussions we have at COIC is workforce housing and affordable housing, you know, they're synonymous, so
right.
There's a bigger picture is all I'm saying with economic development, with a new slate and no houses.
Well, and you're pushing up against, you don't have the transit and the ability,
system.
There just isn't. And so your residents are having to travel a long distance. If they could live in this community and work in this community, that's the win. It meets a lot of other state objectives. So the criteria for funding, we haven't established a criteria for the new 40, but typically you would need to address things such as, that's why the mental health funding is big. So being able to show that by housing, you're going to have better health outcomes, which I think is fairly easy to address for this certain populations. Those exiting foster care was another prioritized segment of the population, and those re-entering the communities after being incarcerated. So I think we would probably help to it would help to craft an application that would be leaning toward the health outcomes, toward the families, kids, economic development, that sort of side.
Right. Let's move forward. Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me like that's really hard. I'm kind of going, okay, is there another path? Can you take and sell city bonds that are tax exempt?
We'll let Kemper
support some private.
Because there's federal money also.
Is it?
There's some federal. You know, there's federal. Is there federal funds for some of this? USDA or?
A lot of those funds go through Orient Housing and they dole them out.
Okay.
Yep. So same group.
Any. Karen, you had a question?
I volunteer at the senior center here in town. I spend about 5 days a week there, 8 hours a day. Just last week, I had 8 people that needed some place to live. Mm-hmm. And there is no place here.
Yeah.
We need affordable housing.
Absolutely.
And we need as much help as we can get, Susan. Mm-hmm. Because believe me, it isn't going to wait 5 years. We need it now.
The difficulty won't be on our side. The benefit will be that we have a county that has land holdings to be able to benefit communities such as this. The difficulty is the process that we have to go through, the competitive nature of what the state of Oregon is facing in terms of housing stock. But I think you have a great story to tell here. And you know, we have our county's well positioned to be able to help you push.
Little Deschutes Lodge has 78 applications for people sitting there waiting for a space. They're not taking any more applications because they're embarrassed, because down the road they're waiting for those people to vacate those places. And it doesn't always mean death, but it does mean tragedy type thing. So we need that here.
Yeah.
We genuinely have no housing here almost.
Well,
and if we have it, it's dumps.
Eric
and it's really sad.
Oh, absolutely. And Eric and I took care of a family that was in our parking lot. We have a woman that was sleeping in the gazebo in our little park area. I mean, the needs, I've never seen anything like this. But for me, my commitment, I want to make sure that the families that are here in the Lapine area get to stay in the Lapine area. That's where their support systems are. That's where their families are. And we know that if we take people out of that support system, their health declines. And their, you know, it's a number of factors that make sense to do it now.
We need lots of services here, trust me. I was listening to him on his mental health, and I had 3 calls this week on people that needed help with mental health. They do not have no transportation. They have no way to get to any place to get it, and there's nothing here in town.
Well, there is now, where I think we're, so we'll maybe need to make sure that we...
The LaPine Community Health Center is putting a mental health practitioner in place here.
Good.
And along some of the lines, it is important to always understand that the process from the federal government money to the state and all of the competing interests make it a long system of happening. So it's important that you have a sharp pencil, you approach it in the proper way. An example is Little Deschutes Lodges. I think there were 22 applicants in the state at the time, and the first round they got denied, and then eventually it did come around, but each one of those packages had significant needs, and when you're trying to balance who's going to get it, two or three fall off the table before the money, by the time the money is spent. So there's no doubt, but we've got good partners.
Yes, and, we do. And this marriage is great.
you better,
yeah, we need to.
Other sure. People may have yep. Some other things yep. They okay. Want to bring up.
Commissioner?
So, yeah, other items we did bring. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just, excuse me, we got a couple other items. I'm sensitive to your time. I know we were only scheduled till 5:30.
Well, we're going to eat, and the mayor has a prerogative as mayor, you know, to make the meeting start 5 minutes late, 6:05.
Okay. I know when the clock says 6.
So. We do have Nick and Peter here to talk about Goal 11 a little
yes.
Bit, but we have another item. As long as Susan's here, I'll ask her to tee that up. And it sounds like there's some additional material that might have been distributed on an old loan between the LaPine Water District and Deschutes County when the district was just getting going, that we wanted to talk about real quick here. And maybe give you some good news with that too. So
way back in 1999, I believe.
Way back.
Way back.
Way back.
Before there was a city.
So when the water district was just getting formed, I don't know if some of you remember, LaPine Water Company was headed by the Giesler's, Patrick and Joel Giesler. I love when people know what I'm talking about. So they were going to do a development, and they had drilled for water to get a water source. Their development didn't happen, but they had this water source, so they kind of offered it to us to see if we wanted to buy it. The county was involved. We went ahead and purchased that on behalf of the water district because the water district was just getting formed and there was no money. So the county paid $60,000 for the water rights, the well site, you know, on all the development that had occurred. That is the site up on Finley View Road that is now your municipal water source. The loan was supposed to be repaid by the water district through SDC/hookup fees. That never happened because there was believed to be a subsequent kind of a verbal agreement between the county and the water district that we were developing the new neighborhood and we had our industrial park, that as hookups occurred for our properties that we would just use up that credit of $60,000. And so the intent was that there would really never be any cash exchanging hands, that we would really not be paid back that loan. Well, you know, time goes on, and for the past several years, I think it has come up in both the county audit and the city audit, and of course the water district dissolved because the city was incorporated. So we're trying to clear this off the books. We feel that the intent of that loan has been met. I spoke to the board about it this week, and I think we're all in agreement that we would just like to forgive the loan and get it off all of our books. So.
Hooray.
Goodness.
Happy days.
See, there was a document, they have a draft, and it's, it's not a resolution.
It's a debt satisfaction and release agreement.
Would you like us to approve that tonight?
Yes, and if both boards could approve
if you think it's appropriate.
Yeah. It won't take us long. She emailed me about the loan And when she's called, I was busy and I haven't called her back, and then I just put, what loan? Well, I knew what loan.
I was trying to get a hold of him to make sure my language and my information.
Then she said, oh, you might like what I'm going to tell you. So then I called her back because I know nothing about this loan. I don't know about it.
So I'll just go through, I'll skip the whereases. But
do they have it already written?
Yeah, it should be. Did this get passed around? The work session, they can't really vote because we didn't. So it's there on their packet. It'll be here.
So let me just, not
short,
a copy, but I'll just read the agreement. So basically, number one, the outstanding debt obligation of City of Lapine on behalf of the former Lapine Water District to Deschutes County in the sum of $60,000 is declared fully satisfied. Deschutes County hereby releases and forever discharges City of and from all actions, causes of action, suits, debts, or claims of any nature which Deschutes County had or has or may hereafter have in law or equity against City in any way arising out of a $60,000 debt obligation described herein. And so we do have for signature block for the county administrator and for the city manager. Yes.
So I would assume that that's not a hard one for.
We can get that on the agenda. Trust me.
But our auditor, everyone kind of brings it up, and your finance department. I met with them. They were like, you know, what do you do with this thing? So anyway, I think it just makes it better, and I think the intents were met. And again, I tell you, the people here were pretty lucky. The county had. Oh, if you look over the decades, the county was very generous to this area doing it. You guys had the resources to do stuff like that, and you did. You didn't just ignore it all. So it's, again, that's a benefit to the community. They got a free, to a degree, a well site and a well.
That for $60,000, what a value. That's the main source, the water rights, the well pad itself, the well deep in the ground. So at the time, that was a very good deal, and it was kept, you know, on the books for that. It's interesting, you mentioned auditors. This is one of those things where every year, after all the balance of the accounts and all the charts and everything, there's these little line items that say, why is this still here 10 years later? But we understand that some of these hookup value have been utilized.
Yes.
It's not like a full $60,000 write-off.
Exactly.
There's been benefit to both sides. Some of the hookups of the development have happened in the past. It hasn't been kept track of real well. The city came in when the water district went away. So this is just to take it off the books. But there's value on both sides.
Yeah.
Okay. That goes to that county-city partnership that has always been there before it was a city. And again, you folks have been gracious to this South County. And people forget that. And we need to make sure this is headline news out there. That's great.
Yep.
Very good.
Goal 11.
Thank you.
Okay,
yeah, goal 11. So we brought some staff for this.
Pete, you can have your chair back.
Thank you. So I got a couple handouts here for you. So, Peter Russell, Deschutes County Transportation Planner. So, for those of you who know, we've had a long history of dealing with nitrates in Deschutes County, and there was a steering committee formed back in 2010 with the Department of Environmental Quality to look at possible solutions, and one of the solutions they unanimously selected was to pursue a Goal 11 exception. So what that means in English is that under the state planning system, you can't have sewers outside city limits or unincorporated communities unless you get an exception. So we, being Deschutes County, Department of Land Conservation and Development, and Department of Environmental Quality, are applying for a Goal 11 exception, which would give the option of allowing property owners to sewer in southern Deschutes County if it's approved. Sewers wouldn't be required or mandated, and the county and the state at this time aren't paying for them, but it would be property owners could have the ability to form sewer districts as options should they have septic failure. Obviously, it's a fairly keenly interested topic, and so we decided that we're going to hold the public hearings. It's a land use application to our planning commission to do this Goal 11 exception. So we're going to have a notice public hearing. What you have in your hands is a copy of the flyer that we mailed to 10,000 properties in southern Deschutes County. So basically, if you're south of Sun River and you're zoned RR10, rural residential 10 or forest or anything like that, you got one of these. because that's mainly where the proposed exception area is. There's a little bit with the subdivision, Newberry Estates to the east of 97, but it's essentially south of Sun River, west of 97, down to the county line. And because it's such a keenly followed issue, we're going to have our planning commission come down to Lapine for the public hearing on July 23rd. Also because we're doing it in July because we've heard a lot from the public about, well, there are some snowbirds and we want to make sure that they had a chance to participate in the process. So we're going to have it when, you know, the maximum of people here. We also sent the notice to the property owner, not the address, you know, on site. What that means is that if you're a property owner in California, you got this notice as well. So I've had lots of calls from folks in California, the Willamette Valley, who own property over here and want to know what's going on with Goal 11. Also, to maximize public outreach, we're having two hearings on July 23rd. Again, it's going to be here at your Lapine Community Center. So one's at 2 o'clock and one's at 5:30 in front of our planning commission. We thought that'll maximize the amount of time for folks who, you know, are retired, want to, you know, come in the earlier one they can. If there are other folks who are working, we've got a typical night meeting. And then we're going to have a third public hearing, basically it's a continuation of, well, the one on the 23rd, August 13th, at our planning commission up in Bend. Our planning commission there, we also have the hearings videotaped and streamed, so if someone wants to follow it but doesn't want to drive to Bend, they can do that on the, you know, on the internet, or they can come up. So the planning commission will see this burden of proof, which, you know, Nick brought along, so you can see it's just a quick and easy read of 34 pages of spellbinding prose. And the way it was done, the divvying up of the task, is DLCD wrote the findings for all the Goal 11 and the exception process. DEQ gave the technical material for the nitrate issue. I filled in the burden of proof for the areas that deal with the County Comprehensive Plan and the Newberry Country Plan, which is a addendum to our comp plan, and also a Goal 12, which is a transportation issue. So there's 19 statewide planning goals. The burden of proof hits about, I think, half of them, between economic development, housing, and you name it. But it's primarily, you know, Goal 11. So it'll go to our planning commission. People can testify. The planning commission, because this is a plan amendment and zone change, one of the other things it does is it adds a policy to the Newberry Country that you can't upzone if you get a Goal 11 exception on your property. One of the things we heard during the past several years, that people don't want to have the pattern of land use change in South County. So in other words, they don't want to say, you know, my lot is on septic, now I've got sewer, or potentially have sewer, I can upzone to commercial, or I can upzone to a more intense use. So I'll have a policy that says, no, your zoning is going to be the same pre-Goal 11 as, you know, post-Goal 11. So the Planning Commission will have the two hearings. Doesn't mean it's really over on August 13th. They can continue it to yet another date. We just want to at least have three set. Because it's a plan and zone change, there's no 150-day clock like you'd normally have, or you guys have 120 since you're a city. So it's open-ended. Once the Planning Commission finally makes their recommendation, it'll go to the Board of County Commissioners. We'll have another noticed public hearing. We won't do the 10,000 flyers because everyone who's already, you know, heard about it will have heard it the first part. And then the Planning Commission makes their recommendation to the board. The board then holds public hearings, and the board makes their decision to do, you know, yay or nay on the Goal 11 exception. And you can also, you know, look at the various boundaries. So with that, I know you're getting close to your start time, so I'll shut up in case, see if you have any questions.
Besides the normal folks around that aren't excited about this, that we were all know, is like a Thousand Friends or the Land Watch, what's their thought on this? Because I'm assuming one thing I've heard from people is you're right about upzoning. In other words, one of the concerns was, if I own an acre, this is a fake, I don't know, but I own an acre, once I get sewer, can I cut it into half acres? Now I've doubled the density.
Right, and so.
But what I've heard from other people is they didn't like it, not at all, because though they love a sewer, their three lots next door can't build. Yeah. Because of no sewer.
Right.
So they end up with open space that someone else has paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put in a sewer, not upzoning or not subdividing, now those all become developable.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to have neighbors. Yeah. And so there's a lot of selfish reasons at play here.
Yeah. Right.
Does that come up?
Well, So the first question, you can't subdivide. You have to stay within the minimum zoning. So if it's a, you know, 10-acre parcel and you get sewer, you don't get to hack it up into a bunch of 2-acre. You got to stay with what the minimum zoning is. And almost all the land down here is zoned RR10, 10-acre minimum. It got those small subdivisions had an earlier exception to Goal 3 from the state. So they were recognizing pre-existing settlement patterns. So long story short, no, you can't subdivide. In terms of, you know, we've heard some concern from 1,000 Friends and Central Oregon Land Watch. I hadn't heard the argument about, gee, I kind of like this because it gives me a buffer for eternity because of, septic. On the other hand, septic technology changes and, you know, you could, maybe something could come along.
But right now, those are moratorium laws, correct, on those lots?
Well, go ahead. I was just going to say, in many cases, you're right, there will be three lots that were platted in the 1960s or 70s. And they cannot site a septic system there today because of the high groundwater, therefore they cannot build a home. However, if sewer is available, they then may be able to develop those lots, if sewer is available. So that is possible.
So one of the things, just to give you some sense of context, when we had to do the transportation analysis, because you have, rounding numbers here, you have like 1,823 red lots in southern Deschutes County, which is your 24 inches or less to groundwater. And so we had to look at, what's the transportation impacts of that? Because each one of those lots, since the residential, would generate 10 trips. So our GIS guy went back and looked at the study areas. So all the areas planned for the Goal 11 exception between 1975 and now, 40 years, 1,610 lots developed. So that's like 40 lots a year. So the idea that 1,823 are going to boom, develop in 15 years, probably not going to happen because we're using a 23-year planning 2030 planning horizon, so we're the same with our comp plan. So, and the other thing we do with our traffic is that all 40 are just red lots. Well, there's vacant lots that aren't red lots. So I don't think you see a huge leap up in density. You might see some, but it's there's a steady demand for property down here. And then the other thing we've also heard from folks is that, they do have private property rights. So they're, your neighbor may not want you to develop, but the guy who owns the land says, I have a right to develop my property once, I have sewer on there. So there's the two different viewpoints.
There is no moratorium. We don't want the M word out there.
Right.
There's a practical limitation if you can't get septic approval, but there's no artificially imposed moratorium.
And the limitation is imposed by the state, not by the county. Central Oregon Land Watch has been tracking this very closely. Often they'll remain guarded until the public hearings. And so sometimes we don't know what their position will be until the hearing is out. We did provide the packet. It's on the website. The website is here, and that's where we're really directing folks because it's a voluminous packet. There's a lot of material. The Planning Commission has it, and so does the public. And so Land Watch and others, we're trying to give everybody the maximum amount of time to review and understand the proposal prior to the hearings.
And the one other thing we did is we recognize that not everybody has internet or computers. So we took this 34 pages of spellbinding prose and dropped off copies at the Lapine Library, the Sun River Library, the Bend Library, and then of course at our office for people who don't have internet service or just prefer to have a physical document in their hands and don't want to use up all their printers. So we try to make it as widely available as possible for folks.
In fact, the only other thing I would state is we have heard some concern of why is the second meeting date in Bend as opposed to Southern Deschutes County. We explored every venue possible. The schools are not available because they're all either under construction or they don't have the staff available. We love to use the Shark, but peak season, it's absolutely not going to work. So we're fairly limited in terms of where we could meet. So we thought having it in our offices in Bend made a lot of sense. And we really wanted to provide it on two different days because some people may be on vacation one or the other days. So we tried to be as accommodating as possible.
Okay.
A couple comments real quick. I already heard on the news today, the radio, just the reporter said, Goal 11 hearings allowing sewers in Lapine. We're going to have to work on getting the message a little bit better than that in our community. Lapine is a city that is sewered. We're talking about rural Southern Deschutes County neighborhoods. So I'm just,
incorporating areas.
Yeah, evidently they didn't read the press release or the flyer because they're pretty specific about that.
Come up with just a few sentences that the media can use because it already doesn't sound right in the media.
Where they're using Lapine as an area.
Well,
and so they aren't getting the radio isn't going to get into the so I'd say unincorporated areas.
Well, I'm just thinking I remember, you know, 6, 8, 10 years ago when the commissioners were going through the other process of requiring nitrate reducing systems, it just keeps spinning. I mean, people are going to come out of the woodwork with the craziest information, and staying on top of the information may be very important for a while, just to keep the facts. That's all I'm thinking. You know, we're talking about Goal 11, which is a land use requirement in the state that doesn't allow sewers in rural areas. We're asking to that for that to be removed, but not allowing, not mandating sewers, allowing a neighborhood to discuss the opportunity of sewers. Some neighborhoods, they're chomping at the bit for it. Not a lot, but a few of them. Other ones, they may never get in there in a generation or two. So people need to know some facts.
Is there a way to sit down with the media and outline this in a thorough way that they understand the difference between the pine and
I'll offer to do some of that, but yeah. I'm just saying it's already happening. It's interesting hearing what gets reported on the radio.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments around this? Hearing none, I will. Any other topics?
We have pastas, and you have chicken fettuccine, and there's vegetarian, there's salad, and French bread.
Did you
cook that? We have some of that back here.
Okay, and what I will do is there any further comment from the joint session?
Yeah.
Hearing none, on behalf of the city council, I will... adjourn the joint session and
you can come right back.
Just come back in here and sit down and have your for everybody's information, we'll start at 6:15.
That's not public news. That's very good. That's the flyer itself right there.
Thank you.
You want this?
In that, it was just recording.
Yeah. Well, that's what we got from Kent.
We're used to the cigars.
I like it.
Thank you.
Thank you.